Americans who are 80 years old or older make up the fastest growing segment of the population, and grown children increasingly find themselves caring for their aging parents. The Pew Foundation came out with some recent data. About 40 million Americans are helping at least one parent with the tasks of daily living, and one out of every four households is involved in some kind of elder care. We're having a conversation about elder care on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Joy Laverty is a consultant on aging and the elder care industry. Her most recent book is called Who'll Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Plan Now to Safeguard Your Health and Happiness in Old Age. She also developed the Complete Elder Care Planner. Joy, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, before we dive into the first chapter, you begin your book with two words printed larger than the rest: get real. Tell us what you want to accomplish from get real, from the beginning.
There is a big difference people don't realize between planning for old age and planning for retirement. They tend to intermix those two words together. And most people want to stay far away from that topic of getting old. So they jump into retirement. Where should I go on vacation? Where should I live? Should I just travel the world? Should I work? Should I stay in one place? All kinds of questions that have nothing to do with planning for old age. And that's what I mean, Kate, about getting real. You have to go toward this topic that you don't want to necessarily talk about.
What role does chronic illness play in our discussions about aging and aging well?
As far as I'm concerned, chronic illness does not define us. And I talk about that extensively in my book. Just because we need to use a cane or perhaps a wheelchair, does that redefine who we are as a human being and our contribution to this world? I don't think so. So we can plan on chronic illness as being a part of our lives, but the successful old people that I know who are in my life get up in the morning, take a shower, get out of the house in spite of their aches and pains. And that's what I mean by separating ourselves from our illness. It doesn't define us.
There's the sense I take away from your book that in old age, if it's going well for you, you found a way to remain vital. And this word vital, I kept coming up for me. What does that have to do with aging successfully?
There are actually four parts to wellness and aging actively or successfully, whatever word you want to use. So the four parts are physical, intellectual, social, and spiritual. Now, in there is that word social. We have to stay connected in order to age actively and successfully. Loneliness and isolation is certainly a manifestation of wanting to stay home where it's all cozy and comfortable and stay in our comfort zones. So taking it out into the world and staying connected is such a vital part of being a successful old person.
Some people do see old age and fear isolation. And part of that perhaps comes with restrictions on movement. Adult children often grapple with when to take away the car keys. You mentioned that people don't plan to retire ever from driving. Why is a license in a car such a weighty consideration?
Well, because many of the baby boomers who are venturing toward old age right now grew up in a living environment that was conducive to driving around the suburbs, right?
Mm.
So it meant that we had to get in the car in order to go get a gallon of milk or go on a date. But things are changing. And as you know, the world of autonomous cars and the need to drive is becoming less and less. We have on demand. So people are wise to turn the corner of becoming a driver to becoming a passenger. And the sooner we do that, the more we can feel comfortable with that concept. It's just the way we were raised, but things are changing for the better as I see it.
Talking right now with Joy Laverty. Her new book is Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? It's a planning guide. Plan now to safeguard your health and happiness in old age. She is an elder care industry advisor. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What have your conversations been like, either with your parents or with your children about old age? What plans do you have in place? What challenges do you see? And what questions do you have? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joy, you write, where you live matters. We know people who get older can develop physical challenges that make everyday activities difficult. Memory or other cognitive deficits can also develop. What harm can happen when people don't plan for those possibilities when they age in place, as they call it now, or age at home alone?
Right. We move into a house typically nice and healthy and independent, and we can soon discover that our house becomes unfriendly to an older body, which means our eyesight, our hearing, our physical well-being may be compromised in some way or another. So our house is not necessarily keeping up with the older body. Not only that, but we just touched on it a couple of minutes ago, the idea that once you get out of the house, do you have to get in the car in order to go get something from the store? So aging in place requires that we all take a look at the interior of the house as well as the community in general. Is this going to be a place where I can get old successfully and have people around me have the same kind of mindset, both young and old? You know, the term age-friendly is not about old people, because what's good for old people is good for everybody at every age. So age-friendly means incorporating all ages to sustain our well-being as we go through our physical environments.
It seems like aging in place is really a wonderful thought, but it takes a lot of planning. And you have an age-friendly home checklist. How should people minimize the risks of living alone as we age?
Some of the things that we can do within our immediate environment are relatively simple and inexpensive, like taking a look at it from a safety point of view. Do we have all the handrails and balance bars installed in bathrooms and in hallways? And that doesn't take a lot of money to do, and yet it could save ourselves. Many accidents happen in the slippery tub. Taking a look at the lighting, something as simple as making sure that there's bright, functional lighting installed throughout the house. I have a rule of thumb: never, ever enter a dark room. People do that all the time. They assume they memorize the room and where they put stuff, but that's not necessarily true. And one other thing that people don't tend to remember is this thing about having a small pet. If that pet is near your footing, might you trip over it? Something simple like that. So there are many ideas that I offer in the book about function, communication, lighting, flooring, things like that.
Family members often have a difference of opinion when it comes to whether elderly parents can remain in their homes. Often at the core of these decisions is the tension between independence and safety. We're talking about the complexities of caring for aging loved ones with Joy Laverde. Her most recent book is Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Plan Now to Safeguard Your Health and Happiness in Old Age. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What concerns you about aging? What strategies have you used to plan for your older years? Are you someone who takes care of an elderly loved one? What have you learned about planning for this stage in life? 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back after a check of the latest news. More than 50 million Americans are over 65, and 10,000 more reach that age every day. While that age group is now about 13% of America's population, it'll jump to 19% by 2030. That comes in at about 72 million people, according to a U.S. Census Bureau report. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about quality of life in old age and how to care for loved ones with Joy Laverde. Her latest book is Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Your personal stories and questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. How are you preparing? Have you had this conversation with loved ones? How did it go? Are you trying to manage caring for a loved one from many miles away? What have you learned from this long-distance caregiving? 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Marion, who joins us from Madison. Hi, Marion.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having this really crucial subject. It's appreciated.
Sure.
And so I've been on both sides of this. I cared for my father the last 10 years of his life in my home while working full-time, and the last 2 years, his mobility was to the point where he was just in a hospital bed in my front room, and we were able to use hospice services, kind of just elbow grease and other services to make sure that he was able to stay in the home and die in the home as he wished. And besides having the gift of being able to help my father die, I also was able to see firsthand what was going to happen to my body as I age. We remodeled the house shortly after he died, and the remodeler was kind of struck that a woman in her early 50s would be thinking about a walk-in shower and a toilet that could accommodate a wheelchair. And so it really is a gift to have done that, but it also really gave me a heads up on, you know, just what's going to happen and the importance of maintaining my body, my core strength, getting my house ready, getting my brain ready for what's coming ahead as I age. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you so much.
Marion, thank you so much for your story. Joy, how would you respond?
I would like to say, first of all, that this is the gift that your dad gave you, Marion, and you were wise to be on two levels as you were a caregiver. Not only were you watching for the well-being of your father, but you were simultaneously thinking about yourself as you were aging, and most people just tend to concentrate on the care the caregiving prospect without, you know, being short-sighted rather than long-sighted. So I commend you for being long-sighted, especially when it comes to the subject of money. Caregivers must be aware, are they dipping into their own pockets to care for their parents and subsequently jeopardizing their own long-term financial stability. So thank you so much for bringing up this two ways to look at caregiving, Marion.
Staying home, even with help, and even in the scenario that Marion described, it's not feasible for everyone. And Joy, you write about your friend who is in an assisted living community grappling with the impact of Parkinson's disease. Your words are, for the past 16 years, he has been at the mercy of a call button that is answered by complete strangers. That is really heavy and frank perspective on care in a facility. Can you describe why you took this approach to talking about it in this way?
I refer to relationships in our lives as we grow old as a revolving door. One of the things I learned by referring to my old friends, and there were many interviews that I held with people who are at least 30, 40 years older than me. And the common theme that kept coming up was the longer I live, the more I get left behind. So by the time that I am speaking with people who are in their 90s and 100s, they pretty much have a whole new group of people who are around them that are not the friends and family they grew up with. So the frankness of referring to the story of Marty in the assisted living community where he lives is that this is not uncommon, that we must be kind to everyone and expect that if we live long enough, we may outlive people who we think will take care of us in our old age, and that may not be true.
Let's go to Mary now, who joins us from Linden. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for addressing this issue. I think it ties in with a topic that was covered yesterday on this program, actually, in the afternoon, that had to do with diagnostic testing for older people and how it's no longer recommended based on a person's lifespan. But my comment, which I gave to your producer off-air, was that my plan for my old age is to commit rational suicide, and she asked me, what do you mean by that? And I said, what I mean is that usually people who commit suicide are determined to have been mentally ill or depressed, but what I'm talking about is a planned suicide where I try to determine as well as I can in advance what my functional lifespan is going to be, and when I get to the point where I don't think I will be able to handle things anymore, I plan to kill myself. I don't have children. I heard your author talk about shortchanging your own future by being a caregiver, and unfortunately, I've already engaged in that part of the equation. I don't want to go into any detail about that. And may she rest in peace. But if you do deal with somebody else whose needs who didn't plan for their future, you do end up being shortchanged, and so that's the decision I've made for myself.
Could I jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead, Joy. Yes.
Mary, thank you. Thank you for being so honest with this audience, for bringing up this incredible strategy. I must tell you, you are not alone. People are talking to me all the time about creating exit strategies. That's how they talk about it. The thing about caring for aging parents and other loved ones is most caregivers say to themselves, this is not my picture of my old age, and I've got to make a plan. And sometimes the plan goes into your direction, Mary. Sometimes it doesn't. But many times people tell me, yeah, I'm not going to do this. This is not my plan. And I'm going to do it my way. So thank you so much for being so frank and for saying what you said, because people who are listening need to hear all of their options, and that's one of them.
Mary, thanks for calling in. Joy, often families fight tooth and nail to try to keep a loved one out of a nursing home, out of a skilled nursing facility. Is there a time, though, that there is certainly a place for them?
Absolutely. When we're honest with ourselves and we say, I can't do this anymore, There is an extreme rush of guilt. We feel so guilty that we can't do this. Even families that have many, many siblings say, well, Mom and Dad took care of all of us. Why can't we do this? And so having the option of not being the caregiver and handing it off is a gut-wrenching experience. There are no answers. Siblings need to talk out every single option of caregiving, including the one where they throw up their hands and they say, I can't do this. I'm not qualified. But this is always an individual decision amongst the family members.
And what should that pursuit look like for finding a nursing home? We've seen headlines in recent weeks. The federal government is scaling back fines against nursing homes found to harm residents or put people who live there at risk of injury. How should people who acknowledge they may eventually need nursing home care think about this broader relaxation of regulations? And also, we've also heard about evictions from nursing homes.
Right. And in fact, I talk about my friend Marty, who had been evicted from several assisted living communities before he landed where he is now. People get evicted for a lot of reasons. So it's wise to find out if you are doing your homework on nursing care and assisted living. We know under what circumstances can you kick me out. The process of researching another level of care requires doing it under a circumstance that is not a crisis. In other words, checking out the local options earlier rather than later. Most people don't realize that the good nursing homes and the good assisted living communities have long waiting lists. Many beds are not even available. That comes as a shock to so many families. So if you are even anticipating that a loved one or yourself may require a higher level of care, start doing your homework right now, which means physically going to each and every one of these places, both day and both night, and asking a lot of questions that I also list in Complete Elder Care Planner and in the new book, Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old. It's so important to plan ahead. A life plan community is also another option, by the way, and this is one where you may move in as an independent living, healthy individual and then live through a continuum of care. There is one common theme we all share, and that is we all have to live somewhere, and there shouldn't be anything that's stopping us from doing our homework now for all levels.
We're having a practical conversation this hour about aging with elder care consultant Joy Laverde. You can join in this conversation. Have you thought about questions about old age? 800-642-1234. What is a person's responsibility to family as you age? What do you owe yourself? Are you making decisions right now? How do your loved ones know what you want? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dan, who joins us from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I was going to talk about something else, but one of the things I want to bring up is when a person gets to be 65, if you're on like the Wisconsin food card or food share, you go from, say, $150 a month just to $15 a month in helping out with food. Now, our own government should be doing something to help the senior citizen, because they're talking about cutting down on Medicare, cutting down on Medicaid and things like this. These are things that the senior citizen has been paying in all his life in taxes. And it's really a shame when our own government right now is stealing money out of the pockets of those people that need it.
Well, Dan, thank you for that comment. And Dan also wanted to make a comment that he knows people who are active and living in their 90s and that he loves talking with the elderly. Joy, his first comment, though, it is expensive as you age. There are expenses that go along with it, and you dedicated quite a bit of your book to getting old and how to deal with expenses.
Yes. So many people, this is just one of those strategies. First of all, Dan, thank you for bringing up the cuts in government and the realities of food share programs and so on, because what you said is absolutely true. So my book assumes that we must go forward in spite of what's happening in the government, and that we must begin the process of creating ways to sustain ourselves. Financially, it's going to be tough. However, the good news is I know people personally who don't have a lot of money, and they have figured out a way to come together as a village, to feed each other, to take care of each other, to be social together. And it doesn't cost any money, substantial amounts of money. Taking care of our neighbors, being kind and being sharing as a village and as a community, as a neighborhood. I live in a high rise. Our neighbors on the same floor become a community of people who help to take care of each other in spite of the absence of a lot of money. So yes, I do spend a lot of time talking about strategies to begin the process of assuming that the government isn't going to take care of us financially or otherwise.
And you have a long list of ways people who are aging can create income streams on the side, these kind of like retirement side hustles. It ranges from crossing guard to keynote speaker, house sitter, mystery shopper. We think of traditional retirement as an escape from work. How crucial is work going to be for people who are aging?
It's going to be crucial both from a mental point of view and also financial. So this is the other thing I want people to begin to plan ahead regarding those two needs. However, at some point, my experience has been when I am in the presence of old people, is they tell me the social need to stay connected starts to take over relatively quickly, and that getting a job is in part-time or otherwise is one of the best ways to stay connected. So it's kind of a fun thing. I had a lot of fun putting that list together. People who can't get out or who are you know, like we're all experiencing this cold wave. I live in Chicago. You can't get out on it at a time where it's 17 below wind chill factor. There are virtual assistants. There are things that we could participate in. I'm sitting in front of our computer and just staying warm and participating in ways to make money sitting in front of your computer. So there's a lot of neat ideas there. And I was surprised at the amount of things we can do just by working from home.
The elder care industry is big business. According to government estimates, about $1.2 trillion is spent on health care for older Americans each year. Also consider the share of total health expenditures paid for by federal, state, and local governments. It's projected to increase by 47% by 2025. This is a practical conversation we're having about aging with elder care consultant Joy Laverde. She stays with us. Her new book, Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Have you considered this question? Have you had the talk with family members? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back after a news update. In California alone, complaints of nursing home evictions have jumped 70% in 5 years, reaching 1,500 last year. That's according to the state-employed long-term care ombudsman, who is responsible for resolving consumer complaints. Nationally, discharge and eviction complaints have remained more or less steady in recent years after rising significantly between 2000 and 2007. That's according to data collected by the federal government. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking through the complexities of aging and who will care for us when we're old. Elder care consultant Joy Laverde stays with us. What questions do you have about planning for getting old? Did you know what you want, or are you struggling with making decisions about your home, your money, your family, or your health? Have you made changes to make life easier when you're older? 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Mary, who joins us from Butternut. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Go ahead.
The road that I live on, the township I live in, is Chippewa, and I know that they've got, which I found out like 3 months after I moved up here, if you pay $100, you can get your driveway plowed. Well, I don't have $100 I can waste on my driveway, so I can't get my driveway plowed, and it's a long walk from my house down to my road. Well, my car is parked down by the road, and I know I was stuck. I had managed to get into my driveway, but I couldn't get back out. And people could see me struggling with shoveling and trying to get my car going, and they would just go past me. They were deliberately not looking towards me as they drove by. Not one person stopped to help me. Not one.
And Mary, I'm going to get Joy to respond here, both to how winter presents so many challenges and also about doing the right thing when you see someone in need.
Oh, boy, I'm upset. I'm upset for you, Mary. I would like to say that these kinds of situations could possibly be averted by creating relationships earlier than you think. We know in the winter, and we know in the terrible heat of the summer, that we're going to be challenged, especially those of us who are Midwesterners, and we deal with all kinds of situations. Knowing that the only help you can get is by someone who comes to you and says, let me help you. These kinds of relationships don't happen typically unless we establish relationships far before we need help. I am sympathetic to what is happening, Mary. No one has $100 for a stupid plow in the driveway. I so agree with you. However, the connections that you make today at church, at work, at school, at the local hospitals, at the grade schools and the high schools, where high school students have to get extra credit for community goodness, reach out to all of those kinds of community settings where you can let your needs be known far before you need them. This is what we're all going to have to do, and we're going to have to do it for the rest of our lives. This is the message I'm trying to get across. No one should be in your situation, and it would be nice to think that people have a mindset to help their neighbors. But they just, not necessarily, they may not. And there you go.
Mary, thank you so much for calling in. Joy, we really need to acknowledge the end of life. You talk about this concept of legacy. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's funny because I love the topic of legacies, something that we leave behind after we're gone. However, most people don't like to think like that. I mean, why would I want to do something that says I'm going to die? And this is a tough subject. So what I like to do is think about legacy as something we do while we're living. And that means carrying on traditions and letting people know our stories. So here's a real easy way to do that, if this is something that interests you. Walk through your house and look at something that means a whole lot to you. Maybe it came from someone who passed it on to you and told you a story. Do you have something? It can be a necktie, it could be a book, that you can give someone else that tells a story about you, and you create connection now instead of when you're no longer here. My mother did this for me. She gave me my grandmother's scissors. And I remember those scissors when I was a little girl. And so now one of the most precious items I have in my collection of stuff are my grandmother's scissors. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by leaving a legacy. What do you have that you can give to someone right now, whether it's anything? It doesn't even have to be an item. It could be the way you are with someone, so that someone can cherish that moment for as long as they live.
Let's bring in Mark, who joins us from Plover. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Hey, I work at a nursing home right now, and at the last staff meeting, the staff at the home was reminded that you are not allowed to use your cell phone or other media when you're on the job or in front of the residents. And I think one of the biggest problems we have is that we as a society are being more self-focused and less others-focused, and that's why the seniors get left behind, because we just don't care like we used to. There's no compassion like we used to have. There's less. There's none, but there's less.
Mark, may I ask, how long have you worked at the nursing home?
I've been there since November, and this is January, and I just shake my head sometimes. Yesterday I just walked by, and the poor woman's nose was running, and I stopped to wipe her nose.
Mm-hmm.
Simple compassion. Love the woman. She can't help it.
Joy, go ahead.
Oh, Mark, thank you for bringing all this up, and hooray to your nursing home for no personal time on technology, which really does cut into personal relationships. A really neat thing you said was about helping a woman with her nose running. I carry with me at all times a hanky, a brand new hanky, and I keep it in my purse or keep it in my pocket, and I actually give them away when I am in a situation like you just described. I also carry with me gloves that I buy at the local drugstore for $1. Those kind of, they're stretchy kind. And I hand those out as well. Can all of us who are listening come up with some kind of gesture that we are prepared to do on a regular basis and just begin this process of being kind and compassionate at a moment's notice? Thank you, Mark, for bringing these needs up, because we all need to do this for the rest of our lives.
Joy, you also encourage people to decide how they want the living to handle their body and their burial. Can you walk us through that conversation and what that looks like?
Well, first of all, let me answer your second part. What it looks like to handle our bodies after we're gone is anything goes these days. Some people are having their ashes shot up into the universe. Other people are doing a green burial, which means nothing that is going to do harm to the earth, and everything in between. Because there are so many unique ways to dispose of a body, it will all do us a lot of good, since we know that is going to be the case for us, to look into options early on. Now, this is well and good if it's us who's planning for our body, But bringing up this topic with family members is not easy, as many people who are listening know. So put it in writing, perhaps, put your name on an envelope and say to be opened if someone does not want to talk about it with you. However, make your greatest attempt to ask people if they will give you the time of day to talk about this so you can have your needs met. You can always make it legal, put it in a will, and an attorney will make sure that an executor will carry out your wishes.
Joy, as we round out this conversation, there was this one other idea that was really interesting, where you take your younger self and you put a picture of your younger self in an envelope and some other things about your life, and then you tell yourself on that envelope, do not open this until you are X age. Tell us about what's behind this.
We have the advantage of time travel at any given time as a way to learn something new. This idea about putting in writing who you are today and then opening up 10 years later gives us insights as to how we've evolved as a human being. It also asks us our questions, did we meet our goals? Did I do what I said I was going to do? Who am I now? These are all questions about old age. And so there are a lot of tools in order to make us better human beings as we grow old. And the one that you just described is only one of many.
Joy, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. This has been fun and I hope insightful.
Joy Laverty is a consultant on aging and the elder care industry. Her most recent book is called Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Plan Now to Safeguard Your Health and Happiness in Old Age. She also developed the Complete Elder Care Planner. This Hour of the Morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation on aging, you hear it on the Ideas Network.